welcome to the F1 Strategy Report for Apex Race Manager, the mobile strategy game. On this week's edition, the season-ending Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, Nico Rosberg is the 2016 Formula One World Champion, and has Ferrari finally made a good strategy call? That's all to come in this, the year's final edition of the Strategy Report. My name's Michael Laminato, and my guest this week for the championship edition, that sounds good, of the Strategy Report is Nathan Harper, the man behind Beer Mogul Games and, of course, Apex Race Manager. Nathan, how are you?
I'm very well, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy that we've got a result for the championship. I'm happy.
Yay.
After 21 races, Formula One gets to take a break. A little bit sad we don't have Formula One, but what a race to tie it up.
It was pretty special, wasn't it, in a few different ways, and some unexpected.
Yeah, a couple of unexpected, depending on who you ask. Maybe we're naive, according to at least two people in the paddock, if we did not expect what happened in this race. But I'm willing to have just sat back and enjoyed what came to us without having to say one way or the other what should or could have happened. It is Nico Rosberg. I think, well, we've gotten maybe a whole minute through this podcast without saying Nico Rosberg is the
no
world
spoilers.
Champion. Yeah. No, hashtag no spoilers, or hashtag, according to some on Twitter, not my champion, which is a bit harsh.
That's very inappropriate.
Yeah, because, let's put this out there, first of all, before we can get into the strategy of this race. The only winner there's ever been of a world champion of a world championship is the one who scored the most points. And Nico Rosberg's done a very, very good job of scoring the most points this year.
He has. And I think others are, counting back on race wins and all this sort of stuff just because they're, not happy with the one that actually got the most points.
Yeah. Let's not forget, 2008, Hamilton had fewer wins than Massa. Felipe Massa is hashtag my champion. So.
Yes. Would have been a nice way to send him off, too.
Yeah, if we respectively gave him a championship. God, Massey, just a nice, have this one. Don't tell anyone. Go
Surely
on, take
Lewis
the trophy.
Could have given him one that he's not using anymore.
Well, yes, that's true. At least that car wasn't the crashed car. I mean, it was the crashed car, but they repaired it for him.
Oh, so, they did they?
Yeah, well, it was the same car he raced in Abu Dhabi, it turns out. So they did repair it, and he didn't crash it. So that was, I'm sure he would have been thinking about that as he raced his way to the end of that Grand Prix, going, I've got to take this one home. Don't want to scuff
exactly.
this. Now, we looked at the race proper. Well, actually, let's start with qualifying, as we do tend to do. Once again, we see that Red Bull Racing is just trying to annoy everyone a little bit, in particular Mercedes and their strategists, by choosing the, let's say, non-preferred tyre in Q2. Q2 is the segment of qualifying where if you qualify in the top 10, you choose the tyre you start the race on. When everyone else is using the Ultra Soft, which is the fastest tyre available this weekend, they went for the Super Soft, and only one of their drivers, however, really ended up using it. But I think what's nice is that because I suppose part of the reason, because we have these three tyres this year, and part of the reason because of this rule, we do get these nice little variations and things to talk about, even on a Saturday, not just the Sunday.
As you know, Michael, all year I've been waiting for it to actually make a difference. You know, I was so excited about it. I thought, this is going to be a real strategic element that people can use. And we had, well, it started off with those, farcical qualifying. Mm-hmm. That was this year, wasn't it? Was that this year? Yeah, it was this year.
Ah, yeah, the qualifying format.
The crazy qualifying for the first couple of races.
Yeah, you almost don't remember.
Seems like a whole year ago.
Yeah.
But then during the year, Red Bull tried it on a couple of times and it didn't make a scrap of difference. Either it rained the next day and it was all thrown away anyway, or the race came about and for whatever reason it didn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I was really excited to see them do it again this time. And at the end of the day, it did make it quite a big difference for one of them, at least, right?
Yeah, but by accident, I suppose. That's only because Max Verstappen
only because he spun.
Yeah, he lost control. Oh, he bumped into Nico Hülkenberg. At the time, he said Hülkenberg didn't leave enough space. Probably reflected on the fact he was on the inside of the corner and didn't need any space. But he spun and ended up actually using that super soft tyre, which should have had a longer race distance and did have a longer race distance than the ultra soft, to execute a one-stop strategy. No such luck for Daniel Ricciardo, however. If there's one theme in strategy this year. It's that Ricardo seems to, how's this for a hashtag conspiracy, get poorer strategies out of Red Bull Racing. Not intentionally, of course, just by accident when they're trying to test the waters. And it happened again. He qualified ahead of Verstappen, an excellent third, was ahead of him on the track, of course, because Verstappen spun, and then ended up behind him after the strategies.
Yeah, it's quite bizarre, isn't it? I'm not sure how, whenever there's two and one's really not going to work, Dan will end up on that strategy. You can guarantee it.
They just trust him to do his best on the less good strategy. You know, they've got a lot of trust in his abilities.
But do you think that he did that first, the first pit stop to actually get off those super softs? He probably could have gone longer, right? But he ended up going quite short, and maybe it was because he was boxed in by the Ferraris at the time?
Yeah, there are a couple of things at play here. So to paint the picture, once the race started, Daniel Ricciardo stopped on lap 9. This is after Hamilton stopped on lap 7 and Rosberg and Vettel on lap 8. And Raikkonen on lap 7, I should say, as well, for the context of this. And because the pack was really close together at this point, and we find out a little bit later why it was that Hamilton was pushing everybody so close together, and also because the performance difference between the Ultrasoft and the Supersoft wasn't that huge, when Ferrari stopped, they were essentially going for an undercut of Daniel. And Red Bull Racing decided that the possible advantages of the Supersoft, because apparently no one really knew how long it could go, weren't enough. They didn't want to test it. They just wanted to play into Ferrari's game, not unlike the way that Ferrari and Red Bull played into each other's games in 2010, when both of them lost world championships for Mark Webber and Fernando Alonso, because they were too busy thinking about their strategies and not about everything else. And it turned out that, as Max Verstappen showed, because he went until lap 21 because he was already so far down, what did he have to lose? The tyre went fine. Yeah, he had to drive a bit slow, but he ended up in fourth after going all the way down the order. So it was interesting because in practice, everyone said, ah, the Supersoft's not much good. No one's gonna really use that. Turned out to be the pivotal race time.
I don't think they even picked many for the weekend, right? I think they all took maybe one or two sets each.
No, most of them picked very few, as you say. And in the end, most drivers used them, at least most that were trying to get somewhere with strategy. Neither of the Mercedes cars did because, well, they had no reason to. And the top 10 because they were already on two stops with the Ultrasoft, I suppose. But yeah, the movers in the bottom 10 certainly got a kick out of them in the last half of the race, and certainly Sebastian Vettel created a lot of tension by choosing that super soft tyre at the very end of the Grand Prix. But to get there, first we have to go through exactly how we got to a position that Sebastian Vettel potentially could have ruined the world championship aspirations of Nico Rosberg. Because Lewis Hamilton was taking strategy upon himself in this Grand Prix, and not in a way that certainly the Mercedes pit wall was happy to see, because his entire mission throughout the Grand Prix was to go as slowly as possible. And this is, I mean, this was really slow. This was like 2 or 3 seconds a lap slower, to the point where the whole field never got a chance to really break up like we normally see.
It was fantastic, wasn't it? I was really surprised at how blatantly he was doing it. And he'd speed up on the long straights so they couldn't get near him. And then he would just back right off through the slow parts of the track. I think at one stage he did, I think it was near the end of the race when he was on a really light fuel load, he did a lap that was 9 seconds slower than his qualifying lap.
It really was that blatant. And now, to give credit to Hamilton, other than, you know, doing what he had to do to get the championship and managing the race, because it must be, I can only imagine it must be hard to drive such managed slow speeds and avoid being overtaken. Like, to drive slowly deliberately and keep position must be tricky. He did it in a way that managed to evade sanction from his own team. This is a strategy we've never talked about on this show before, because he knew that Mercedes was willing to pit Rosberg first, give him the undercut, if they sniffed that Hamilton was doing this. So he drove slow enough in the first and second stints that you couldn't really tell, and Rosberg fell behind Verstappen in one of them, which we'll talk about in a moment. But it was in the last stint, after all the stops had happened, after which he could not be punished.
They couldn't undercut him.
Yeah, exactly. He said, oh, I reckon I'll pull up the handbrake right about now.
Yeah, it was very well done. And I also liked how open he was over the radio about it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Each time they would point it out to him, he'd be like, I'm fine with this pace. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, one of them where they were saying that Sebastian Vettel was a threat to pass him, he said, well, I'm losing the world championships. I don't really mind losing a race. I reckon Mercedes might have minded.
Yeah, yeah. It was very well done. He did it. He did it in a classic Lewis style.
It was a villainous sort of end, I suppose. It was very conniving of him, very clever, I suppose. He did what he had to do. It had been raised beforehand. I wonder if Christian Horner hadn't suggested it, if he'd have thought about it. Probably he would have. It was controversial, though. It divided opinions. What was your take on it? Other than the fact it gave us a fantastic spectacle, was it fair on his teammate?
You know what? I swung, and I still am swinging back and forth on it. During the race, I was anxious because I wanted to see a new world champion. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was a good opportunity, and I really wanted Nico to get over the line. So I was getting really angry, and I'm like, this is just bad sportsmanship. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, there is nothing good about this. It was nearly 1:30 in the morning on Monday. But then it kind of settled in a bit, and I thought, you know what? That would have been such a boring race. Mm-hmm. Because he would have been miles out in front. Rosberg would have been sitting 3, 4, 5 seconds behind him, mm-hmm. and then there would have been a 5-second gap mm-hmm. to the rest of them. And it would have been really uneventful. And it was so exciting. Mm. It was so good to see the action in there. The other guys were you know, almost falling over themselves. It was a little bit comical, actually, wasn't it? Lewis is probably sitting up there going, come on, guys.
I want you to pass us. Just come on. And no one could do it. No one wanted to do it.
No.
I thought it was... It put Mercedes in a very interesting situation, because listening to Toto Wolff and Paddy Lowe afterwards, the grand bosses of the Formula One team, their approach to every race has always been, of course, Constructors' Championship first. They won the Constructors' Championship, but the rules never change because that's what is the fairest way. You have the same rule for every race. And their rule is always that they must get a 1-2 finish. And their defense is that that's always been the rules. But I guess on the other hand, and Hamilton has, I suppose, a point here, is that by asking for that, they are in effect influencing the championship fight between the two of them, because a 1-2 would guarantee Nico Rosberg the finish. So I thought it was a really interesting philosophical question for this race.
Catch-22.
Yeah, and Toto Wolff said it's something they'll have to think about over the summer when they're possibly, you know, docking Lewis some pay or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was a really interesting situation.
Yeah, I really hope they don't do anything after that. I don't think that's a positive thing for the sport, and I don't think it's a positive thing for either Lewis or Nico if they suddenly start reprimanding people and fining them or whatever they're planning to do.
Yeah, and certainly no good for the people who operate Mercedes social media pages, because they don't need that kind of abuse. I've seen some of it.
They're already getting it.
Yeah. And all Nico Rosberg was win the championship. My goodness, imagine if they penalised Lewis Hamilton. I think it would all be over. Ooh, for them.
Yes.
The man who was the second part in this act of Lewis Hamilton's was Sebastian Vettel for Ferrari. Now, usually when we talk about Ferrari on this program, and I say usually because it's been literally since round one when we had you on last, it's because
been
Ferrari has
fodder.
Yeah, has completely ruined their race. They've done something stupid. They've not understood the race. They've blown a strategy call. But in Abu Dhabi, not so. In fact, they made possibly the strategy call of the race, along with Red Bull Racing and Max Verstappen's one stop, because they ended on the super soft, and that what brought us all this tension.
Yes, yeah, it was fantastic. It was a really good move. I question whether it was a Ferrari move or a Sebastian Vettel move. And I did hear that radio call when the others had pitted, and he knew that he'd been undercut, and he was just like, well, what are we going to do now, guys? And it was very similar to the Verstappen situation, right? Where it was like, well, we've got nothing to lose now. We could pit like normal and we'll come out in sixth or whatever it is. Or we could just try something crazy. But I would like to point out that I did see a tweet from you, Mr. Laminato, about halfway through the race with a very sarcastic tweet about Ferrari's race strategy, and it came good.
I'll take that as a like. Well, I think it was someone had said something to the effect that it really is. I mean, let's be honest, even on this program right now, only 30 seconds ago, we opened with applause of Ferrari by saying how bad they've been all year. So we do have to balance the light,
including
the
first half of this race.
Yeah, well, exactly. For most of the race, they're kind of like, well, I don't know what we're doing, just doing what everyone else is doing. And then, yeah, possibly by Sebastian Vettel's hand, they said, well, let's have a go. And they had a go, and it worked out. They finished it. Possibly could have won. Well, actually, look, It's ambitious to say he could have won this race because the circumstances in which Sebastian Vettel was challenging for the podium were extremely specific to Lewis Hamilton slowing everybody down. But potentially...
And I got the sense it was a bit tentative as well, the way he was approaching them.
Well, you want to talk conspiracy number two. Sebastian Vettel is... I don't know what you think nationality is on his passport, but as far as I know, it's the same as Nico Rosberg's, isn't it? Conspiracy. Same as Mercedes nationality as well. My goodness. We've unearthed
And where's he driving next year? Oh, no. Not with them. Not with the Italians.
Yeah. No, not yet. Well, unfortunately for him, I suppose. But it was... That was one of the things that were raised. I think it was all a bit nonsense, though, because I thought what was a fantastic backfiring of this strategy, or an extra twist to this story, was that part of the reason he didn't try too hard, let's say, to overtake Nico Rosberg, because Lewis Hamilton was so close in front of him that he didn't think he could do it without hitting Lewis.
Yes.
Which, imagine a situation where the tension builds, Hamilton is leading the race, Vettel's going for a pass that could deny Rosberg the championship, and just cleans up Hamilton, and Rosberg goes through and wins the Grand Prix.
Oh,
what an ending.
That would have been hilarious. Right as Lewis was brake checking them yet again.
I'm writing to Ron Howard immediately. I'm going to get this made.
I thought the other interesting Ferrari pit strategy was the way that they managed to block the Ferrari exit of the Mercedes exit of the pits in both of their pit stops, both of their first two pit stops. It was very impressive.
Absolutely. Yeah, and this was actually potentially a really important part of this Grand Prix, because when Hamilton came into pit, Kimi Raikkonen also pit on the same lap.
He was just far enough back to block him exiting his pit box.
Exactly. So Hamilton was held in his pit box, I think, for another second or so, which meant he had a slow stop, in essence. And then Rosberg came in one lap later, and he was only a second and a half, I think I'm right in saying, down or thereabouts.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and so suddenly he's been gifted a second and a half. And he comes in the pits, and everyone's thinking, well, if he emerges in front of Hamilton here, it's anyone's game. I mean, you know, obviously the championship picture was largely unchanged, but if he's leading the race, that's fascinating. But unfortunately for him, same thing happened with Sebastian Vettel.
He got it even worse.
Yeah, in fact, he lost another extra second. And the end of the day, he got stuck behind Max Verstappen, who was one stopping. And this was the primary point of tension in this race before the last 18 laps in which Sebastian Vettel was threatening to undo everything. It was the fact that he was stuck behind Max Verstappen, who'd started in sixth. And Rosberg even said, well, I didn't think I'd be seeing Max on the track today after all their various encounters up to this point. And he had to pass him. But imagine the tension in that cockpit, knowing Max Verstappen's the man you've got to pass to potentially win the championship.
It was fantastic, wasn't it? And but he was actually in last at one point, right?
Yeah, well, he dropped all the way. Where's my my laptop? If
he
not
must
last,
have dropped
then
to the
essentially
back.
Last.
He must have.
Because, he spun all the way to the back. And,
yeah, because he was... Yeah, and he was passing Mannes.
Yeah.
So, it was fantastic. And I think... Max did a good job of racing pretty fairly as well, right? So he was still aggressive on the track, but he didn't do the didn't run the wrath of the Max Verstappen rule.
Yeah, it was very fair play, and I think it really does go to show that Max Verstappen. Well, I guess it's rare that we talk about Max Verstappen in a defensive context. Normally, it's about other than that win he got in Spain, I suppose I should give him credit for that.
Yeah. And all those moves under braking.
Yeah, and all that. Well, yes. We talk about him negatively usually in defensive manoeuvres, but this was a really great piece of racing. Possibly one of the, I want to say, action of the year. Maybe not necessarily the greatest series of moves, though it was very exciting, but purely because that was such a tense moment for the outcome of this race.
It was so much hanging off it.
Yeah, like my knuckles were white watching that, because it just looked like they were. It just looked like they were coming together. I could already see it in my mind: punctured wheel, suspension broken. Nico Rosberg walks off into the sunset. We never see him again.
And when Rosberg got in front of him down the second DRS straight there, because Max just didn't get the entry onto the straight that he was looking for, they shot it from kind of in front of the cars. And it looked like he was going to clip the back of him, like when Max cut across the back of him and there's all sparks flying out everywhere. It really looked like he'd hit him. It was just amazing.
You completely understand that Nico Rosberg, I reckon 50% of his emotion after the race was winning the championship. The other 50% was still from that overtaking maneuver.
I passed Max.
Yeah, completely out of breath. Feels a bit sick. Probably had a bit of a... felt like he had to have a bit of a vomit at some point because it was just too much stress.
In a change of underwear.
Yeah. Oh, I reckon so. That would have been done subtly somewhere along the way, I suspect. But those were the key points that really made this Grand Prix. Another point I think that's worth pointing out, just for its, I guess it's nice value, was the fact that Felipe Massa at the end of this race, running a very conventional strategy, which was the ultra soft to two stints on the soft, I beg your pardon, defended from Alonso, who did the same, but had the Sebastian Vettel strategy at the end on the super soft tyre, so theoretically was much quicker. But a nice little, I guess, moment of closure for him in the sense that he had to defend.
Yes, of all people.
Yeah, exactly. Of all the people defending against Fernando Alonso, the man who, though not necessarily by his own doing, brought him a great deal of pain over the course of their relationship.
Yeah, I thought that was fantastic, and it was a good way for him to go out when, you know, that car just hasn't been performing in the whole second half of the year, basically, or maybe the whole year. To actually see him, you know, hold his head up and come home with some points in front of his teammate, even if his teammate retired, and in front of Fernando Alonso was, that was pretty special. Mm,
yeah, exactly, and it was a nice way to round out a career of a very nice man. We talked about this in the previous episode, of course, the Brazilian Grand Prix, which let's say was his de facto retirement race.
The other retirement.
But and we must touch on as well, purely because this is the last episode of the series, last episode of the season two, that it was Jenson Button's last race. Now, he didn't do very many laps at all. In fact, he had a zero-stop strategy, but I can tell you he had a many-wine strategy, judging by some of his behaviour after the race and on live television.
Yes, yeah, so you saw Ted's notebook as well?
Oh, I did see the Ted's notebook. I saw there's a great interview of him with Channel 4 with David Coulthard and Mark Webber, in which he's really enjoying retirement even after the race has only just finished. A good ending for him, dare I say, as well. He seemed very happy.
Yes, yeah. And I'm actually very happy for him because he really seems like the time is right and... my guess is he's probably going to do some really interesting stuff next year.
That was the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, really. We had a combination of strategies at the end of the day, all of which were altered in their effectiveness by the fact that Lewis Hamilton was artificially slowing down the entire Formula One grid. And teams learnt as well that they should not be afraid of the super soft tyre because it can bring fantastic results. Only ask Romain Grosjean, who jumped Esteban Gutierrez on poor Esteban's last chance to score points. It was an inter-team battle and he could not do anything. And Gutierrez goes home with 0 points this year and possibly no contract.
Yeah. So he's one of the guys that doesn't have anywhere to go, does he?
Absolutely. It's between him, Pascal Wehrlein and Felipe Nasser, none of whom scored any points at this last Grand Prix. Nasser scored points only once, likewise Pascal Wehrlein. So it's a fight on between all of them to get the remaining seats in this season. But if you look back on the season as a whole, when we started, I think we thought maybe this season was going to be perhaps a little bit closer than it was. But again, if we think about our expectations of the year, the Pirelli rule change, which was possibly the biggest rule change of the entire season, allowing three different tyre compounds, as we saw in this race, really proved great for the spectacle in situations where maybe the win wasn't up for grabs, but second place or a shot at the podium was. And as we saw exactly in this race, all three tyre compounds often came into play.
Yeah. It really was fantastic. And, you know, they even did, you know, back in the Australian race as well. And it really, that was what brought Ferrari unstuck when I was sitting in the stand at turn one after the red flag and saw our friend Sebastian Vettel come back out on super softs and just went, oh my God, what are they doing? They had the Mercedes parked right in front of them with yellow tyres on it.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You could have just looked, guys. just look. Just have a... It's not cheating. It's not a test. It's just a race. Mm. It was really the genesis of the entire season in that sense. What we also saw, though, which I think has been really fascinating to watch in the second half of this year, is that after the championship was essentially done, once Red Bull Racing, well, Ferrari should have realized a long time ago they weren't in contention. Maybe it took them a little while, but when Red Bull Racing realized in a more realistic fashion that race wins were going to be few and far between the second half of the year, the way they've used their strategies, as we alluded to at the start of this show, to essentially deliberately annoy Mercedes, not just for entertainment value, it's been very entertaining though, but to find out how Mercedes reacts, how their strategists work around the curveballs they throw, all in anticipation of 2017 when they think they will be racing directly with Mercedes, means that the second half of this year, as much as being about the Drivers' Championship, has been a big strategic setup to 2017.
Yeah. It's like they've been performing, you know, bizarre mental tests on the Mercedes strategist just to see where they might be a bit soft or where they're going to crack in the future.
Exactly, just to see where James Vowell is going to do. We've seen, for example, splitting their strategies, Max Verstappen one-stopping, perpetually essentially trying to find out what will trigger Mercedes to follow the Red Bull car into the pits or to make a move that might not necessarily be in their best interest. And that's the really fascinating stuff, because we know Red Bull Racing's strong on strategy. And we know Mercedes, well, they haven't really been particularly tested over the last 3 years, but we know they've got a really clever guy heading up strategy. So as much as we could have a big aero and engine battle next year, I think one of the really fascinating battles, if the cars end up being evenly matched, is going to be the strategy between these two teams, because it's going to come down more often than not when you've got four cars to the strategy.
You're right. It's going to be very exciting, and hopefully Ferrari get their act together from a strategy perspective in the off season as well. And all three of them could well be right up there.
I reckon they just need to hire Sebastian Vettel to be their strategist and race driver.
He's quite good.
He does all right. You know, when you ask him, he's often done better than the team itself, which is probably relatively telling.
Which is no simple task when you're out there driving at 300 kilometres an hour. Keep track of what everybody else is doing and try and work out their strategies.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how all those teams unfold, how they deal with the battles next season. It's been an interesting year, though. It's been an interesting 2016. It's the end of a regulatory era, possibly the end of the Mercedes era. We've seen the end of the Hamilton era, unless he comes back again next year and this only proves to be a blip. What was your highlight of the year?
Ooh, I'm having flashbacks now. You know what? As much as I'm a Dan Ricciardo fan, to see Max step up to the main team and get his win on debut, that was pretty special.
One of the milestone moments of Formula One, really. Youngest ever winner. That'll probably never be beaten, you'd think, considering that, what is he, 6 years old now? Who's ever going to do that again? And how he develops next season. Whoa. It's going to be fascinating.
And, of course, the way we were able to see the Shoei evolve over the year was pretty special as well.
Oh, for people who... anyone who's in contention for a podium next year must be dreading the idea that Daniel Ricciardo would be competitive. Oh, it adds a new twist to the competitive nature of these guys, I think, at the very top.
And it was just such an evolution of the Shoei through Australian motorsport as well, right? So it started in the V8 Utes, then it was David Reynolds in V8 Supercars. It went to Jack Miller in MotoGP and through to Dan. It's just been spectacular.
It's become the new defining trait of Australian motorsport. And I don't know how I feel about it, but it's here to stay. And it's all we can really say about it. It's all we know for sure. We will find out in 2017. Nathan, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program. On your program, in some respects, where can people find you?
Thank you, Michael. You can find me at BeerMogul on Twitter. We've got a little game. It's called Apex Race Manager, because it's not allowed to be called Formula Legend anymore. It's on iOS and Android. We also got a little game called V8 Race Manager that we released this year as well, which allows you to have just as much fun with V8 Supercars.
And it must be noted, both of those games have beat the official Formula One game to Android. So it's a good story for everybody.
But not to be plastered all over the Apple featured page like the F1 game has been for the last couple of weeks.
No, that's okay. We've been around for longer. That's all. Nathan, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. It's been a pleasure to be able to watch Formula One season in 2016 as well. We'll see you in 2017.
Okay, see ya.
That's all the time we have for this edition, and in fact the year, of the Strategy Report. If you want to read more about the strategy of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, you can go to f1strategyreport.com and read Jack Leslie's write-up of all the action from the Yas Marina circuit. Or search for F1 Strategy Report on Facebook and Twitter. With almost 4 months until the next Grand Prix in Australia, download Apex Race Manager, the mobile strategy game available on iOS and Android, and fulfill all your strategy dreams, including mistakes like those made by Ferrari. My name's Michael Laminato. You can find me at Michael Laminato on Twitter. The last thing that remains is to thank Beer Mogul Games and Nathan Harper for supporting the podcast throughout 2016, even for the races where not much strategy did happen. And of course to you, thank you so much for your company over the 2016 season on the Strategy Report. Until the 2017 season, it's bye for now.